There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby!
That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, away we go. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. Another couple hours of live local talk. And if you're new to the... I mean, everybody else, they know how to get in touch. But if you're new... welcome, first of all. Glad you're here. Easy to get in touch with the show. Three of the easiest ways are the phone line and the text line, 343-0106, 343-0106, and also the TalkBack feature on the FM Talk 106.5 app that's waiting for you over at the newly anti-trusted Google Play Store. I wish I would have had some kind of influence that... You know, they talk about certain Google Play work with app developers to give them, you know, a better standing on. I didn't get that offer. We just made the app and put it on Google Play. But if you're an Android user, it's on Google Play. If you're an iOS user, it's over at the App Store. Just look for FMTALK1065. And yes, you can use it to send us a talkback message. But you stream the station there, all our podcasts. The first place they post is right there. Show schedules, traffic maps, all that information online. One place, the FM Talk 106.5 app. So check it out. So 343-0106. For a text or call, or you can use that talkback feature on the app. All right, this I mentioned it this morning, and it's good to have this man back in studio. He's been actually in studio in hosting this show and also been a guest many times on this show. So it's good, good to see him back in studio. District 96 Representative Matt Simpson, thanks for coming in.
This is awesome. I had such a good time hosting the show the other day, Sean, or I guess the other day. It seems like it was the other day. It was probably a few months ago. That was a really fun day for me. I really enjoyed that opportunity. Thank you so much.
Well, listen, I'm taking some time off in November, so we'll have to we'll have to talk about that. First of all, from your district 96, there's going to be part of your district, at least from what I've been hearing this morning, just anecdotally, that you know, people at the Buc-ee's this morning with a lot of Florida tags. There's some stories up. There's a lot of evacuees coming from Florida. And you and I before, we're just talking during the news break. It does make sense because Florida folks often would evacuate to Georgia and the Carolinas.
Right.
But look, I mean, now those areas are so messed up that maybe those people that normally would go there are going to come up and hang a left turn and come west.
It's, you know, it took me a while to get across the bay today to get over here to come see you. So it's one of those things. It come through the bayway and the tunnel, and it's an opportunity for us to show Floridians how bad we need that new bayway and new tunnel in Baldwin County and Mobile County. So, you know, it's one of those things. My thoughts and prayers go out to everyone that's already suffering from Helene and still trying to recover from Helene, and that includes Floridians and Georgia and North Carolina. And to have another storm come right behind it the way this one is, it's not good.
Yeah, it's a national discussion I had yesterday with Congressman Carl about, you know, if FEMA's so taxed, as we heard from Mayorkas, that they can't get the work done and they didn't have the money for the second storm. Not only is this the second storm, but we'll talk to Dr. Bill Yaw in about 25 minutes about this. This Hurricane Milton is real deal stuff. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that frightens me, because I've seen, you know, somebody said, well, it might only be a 3 by the time it comes on shore. Only a 3. Frederick was a 3, y'all. Remember what it looked like? I mean, this is really bad.
This is, and it's, you know, the last one, Helene, was moving so fast and just dumped a ton of water in so quickly that you have the flooding that came through. This one's not quite as moving as fast as Helene was, and that's when the dangers start getting there. I mean, Sean, do you remember Sally?
As long as Sally
just stood over top of us, it was a Category 1, but if it stays over top of you, it causes more damage. So, you know, it's... I'm glad the models are showing where it's showing, and they seem pretty consistent where they are. But I've been watching this one for a while. I follow Mike's weather page, keep up with the spaghetti models, right. spaghettimodels.com, unpaid advertisement.
Yeah, there you
but
go.
I keep it up on my phone to make sure that, you know, this is something that we've had to pay attention to. And living down here, and if everybody that's in your listening radar can understand, this is part of the South, and we all come together. So when Floridians are filling up Buc-ee's, or when we take too long to come across the bay, just understand that, but for the grace of God, that could be us trying to travel through another state trying to get away from this. So it's a rough time for everybody right now.
It is indeed. Back here at home, it is the pre-file season, I will call it pre-file season, when looking forward to the legislative session in 2025. Members like you are pre-filing bills. First of all, when does the season change that you go from, all right, last session is in the rear view, and now it is time to start thinking about pre-filing things for the y'all leave there, it's May or something like that. When do thoughts turn to the next session?
Well, I know that there were some people that filed bills on the way out of town from the first session, from the last session. Okay. So we ended in May. So I know people had some bills ready, stock loaded, ready to go that they filed in May before they were there. It gives you a chance to come home and talk to constituents. I think you're having a lot of pre-filed bills this time just because the nature of the beast from the last session. There's a lot of bills that died from gambling, and a lot of good bills didn't move. So there's some people that have refiled bills. I filed a couple of bills that I've refiled. I also think it gives people a chance to get back into the constituents and be around. And anytime you're, you know, kids are off, so you're around other people and you're having these discussions to start, hey, what about this bill? Have you thought about this? Or that's a good idea. We need to look into this. And so you get a break for summer. You're back in the district. You're back around with everybody. And then LSA and everybody's back to work after Labor Day. So people are like, okay, nobody's taking summer vacations anymore. Let's start getting to work, and let's start getting going what we need to be doing.
Okay. As you look at those pre-file bills, and I'll get specific here in a second, do you also try to figure out, now you talk to your constituents, but do you figure out your other members of the legislature and say, you know, hey, can I get some, will I get some support from you on this? I mean, do you start like recruiting?
Yeah, we have several conferences throughout the summer that we go to, and we're around, and you start having these discussions. You start, you know, you start asking anybody, hey, what are you working on? What are you thinking about? What are you looking at for this upcoming session? So as you start going through that, someone says, hey, you know, I'm working on this. It's like, that's a great bill. I'd like to be a co-sponsor.
Okay, so y'all do have a heads up before you even officially pre-file what's happening.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because I was wondering this one, a bill that you've pre-filed that I think you're probably going to get a lot of yeses on, Alabama bill that would make particular rape cases eligible for the death penalty. Your history as a prosecutor here, so you come to this. First of all, describe what those certain cases are.
So it would be if a child was less than the age of six.
Okay.
If a person commits the offense of rape or sodomy on a child under the age of six, then this would allow for the death penalty to be used in these type of cases. I've prosecuted those cases before. I've prosecuted multiple cases where the children was less than six with some of the stuff that they've done. This is something that I'm bringing from my heart. This isn't a political move. I think this is worse than some murders. Mm-hmm. You know, I could see somebody getting angry and getting upset, and there's a fight or something goes on through there. But
crime of passion, kind of thing,
or what goes on. But to do something like that to a 3, 4, 5-year-old, I don't think it's rehabilitable. People talk all the time, we need to go to prison and you can be rehabilitated to come through. I don't think you can do that at 3, 4, 5-year-old. Once you've done that to a 3, 4, 5, you have changed that child's life for the rest of eternity as they go through. And to do that in that manner, I've got no sympathy for you.
So would this be a first in the nation?
No, it wouldn't. Actually, this is a move to kind of counteract what's going on. What happened was in 2008, in a case, the United States Supreme Court in Kennedy versus Louisiana ruled that the death penalty was unconstitutional for cases where the offense did not cause the death of another person. So in 2008, they said, you can't do this. What they looked at for their rationale was, there's only five states at that time that allowed for the death penalty for rape charges, for child rape charges. And they said, because there's only five, that means it's unusual, and this violates the cruel and unusual statute.
Okay.
And their rationale and factor was, look, we look over time, we've gone back to look through how states have changed over time, and they've gone away from the death penalty. Well, last year, the state of Florida passed a bill to change it to where they would have the death penalty for child rape charges. This year, this session, the Tennessee legislature passed a bill where they were having child rape charges could get the death penalty. So what we're doing is changing the narrative of, if you're saying this is unusual, well, we're going to change this right back and use the rationale on you and say, no, it's not unusual. So,
and we come back to the essence of this, which is the most important. I'm kind of getting off in the politics of it. How many states do you think it would be before it does not become unusual?
Well, that's what we're checking. You know, Florida is going to, I'm sure Florida is going to be the first one to be challenged, because Florida led the way last year. DeSantis signed it as governor, promoted it. They've already started a prosecution under this statute to go through to pursue the death penalty. So I am sure that that will.
So that'll be the case that kicks up to the Supreme Court.
That'll be the case that kicks it to the Supreme Court. Tennessee won't be far behind it through there. But what we want to be able to do is show, oh, no, this isn't a change. This is something that other states are getting on board and getting involved with. And right now, the last time that I saw this, I think there were five other states that are looking to try to do this, to try to move into the death penalty for child rape cases. You have states in Arizona, Idaho, Missouri, New Mexico, South Carolina, and South Dakota are looking into it. It hasn't passed yet. But so there's a movement.
But there's an idea of a critical mass, right, of number of states that would put this in, codify this, and then it would be not unusual.
Right. And if that was the only rationale the Supreme Court used, was it was unusual because there were so few states doing it. So if we can challenge that and say, it's not unusual, this is what we're trying to do. Look, if they want to talk about the cruel and unusual punishment, Sean, I think it's cruel to send somebody to prison for 50 or 60 years and just have them sitting there. You know, I don't think we use the death penalty enough. So I think we need the opportunity to show the Supreme Court. We have a new Supreme Court. You know, it's a change from where it was in 2008. And I think that there's an opportunity to support states like Florida and to support states like Tennessee and show them, no, we've got your back. We're here with you. We believe in this, too.
So because there's not a federal prohibition to the states on whether they're death penalty or not. But there is this question of what it can be used for. Obviously, they haven't fought it for murder,
right?
Certainly, that capital offense. But in the case of a rape, that's not on the books, right? For adult, it's a horrible subject here, but adult rape, right?
That's not on the books in Alabama. No.
Okay, but in this case, it would be six and under. This would be a death penalty offense.
Correct. And that's, again, to the discretion of the prosecutor. It's not where every case would be automatic to get it. It'd be left to the jury. The jury could determine, yes, I think the person's guilty, but I don't think they deserve death. It's the same. It'd be the same process as the capital punishment.
But that option would be on the table for him.
It would be on the table.
Also, I was reading through, then under 18, there was another.
So basically what it is, you can't put someone into death if they're under 18 at the time they committed the offense.
Okay.
So, you know, what we put through there is it's going to have to be a life without the possibility of parole if you're under 18 and you commit the offense. Or I think if you're under 18, it has to be life with life. If you're over 18, you're either getting the death penalty or life without the possibility of parole.
All right, we'll come right back. More of our conversation with Representative Matt Simpson right here on Midday Mobile. Text line is open and already busy at 343-0106. Same for the phone calls, 343-0106. Be right back.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you here, and good to have Representative Matt Simpson in studio. Co-hosting our subject this hour. 343-0106 on the phones, and let's go to phone calls first, and then we'll get to a bunch of texts coming in here as well. Let's see, it's George in Mobile. George, you're up first.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
Actually, what I would ask, or what I would like to say, is I would like to see some kind of law enacted in which if a person fired into a crowd an occupied car or a house with disregard for other lives, that death penalty would be on the table for that person. And what I mean by that is, obviously, we all know that, you know, gun violence is going to occur. And, you know, I'm not naive. I know you're going to have, let's say, use the term gangbangers or whatever else. But if two people are firing at each other, or a person drives by a house and intending to hit one guy, let's say person A, but inside is a five-year-old child that gets hit, or a grandmother or somebody else, that was not the intended target, obviously, which may be retribution or something like that, then that person would then be, you know, subject to a death penalty case for killing that child, just like if somebody fired into an occupied vehicle and they were trying to kill the driver and kill the baby in the back seat.
Okay. Representative, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I'll meet you halfway, and I'll tell you that there is a bill, and it's bipartisan. It's being carried by Representative Barbara Drummond in Mobile to increase the penalties for shooting into an occupied building or vehicle.
Yeah, change the level of felony, right?
It would change it from a Class B felony to a Class A felony. So your Class A felonies are 10 to life in prison. Because the fact you used a weapon, there's a weapon enhancement that would make it a 20 to life in prison of what you're looking for through there. So that is a bill that Representative Drummond carried last year. Don't know if it made it through the House or not. I'm fully supportive of it. I know
the sheriff is. I've talked to him about it.
I know her plan is to carry it again. And that is a bipartisan bill that we're working on to see what we can do, because you're exactly right. And I'm sorry, I missed your caller's name.
That was George.
George, you're exactly right. That is something that we need to step up our prosecutions for, because you have so many people just firing randomly and just with the no care or caution for the rest of public life. This isn't a situation where people anymore point gun, aim gun, fire gun.
Right.
They're not aiming. They're just firing for the purpose of firing. Mm-hmm. So I think you're exactly right, George. And we're working on that. We're working to increase the punishment. Now, for death penalty, I'm going to take it one step at a time. I'm a pro-death penalty guy. I don't think it's used enough, but let me focus on the child rape part first, and then we'll come back to you on the other.
Terry says on the text line, just put the child rapist in general population, let nature run its course, saves the state time and money.
It does, but then you get the federal government talking about how dangerous our prisons are. And, I think that a part of the problem that we have with our death penalty is, as well, is it takes so long to actually enact. So you commit a crime and you've got 30 or 40 years before you actually face the punishment of the death penalty. The jury could tell you, you know, you commit the offense. It takes a while to get a capital case to go to trial anyway, just to go to trial. The jury could tell you something, and you're still looking at 30 years after the jury's ruled that you're just sitting there. We're paying for this person that's been committed to death row. We're just going to let them sit there for 30 years. I think that's a problem, too. I think the more immediacy that people can see when the press gets out of, hey, this person committed an offense, and now, you know, they're dying because the state is putting a needle in their arm, not because they just died of old age waiting on the death penalty. I think if you want to use it as a deterrent to prevent other people from committing those offenses, they need to see it happen sooner rather than later.
Okay, let me read this text coming in from B-Dark. Said, sentence them today, put them down the next day, and the prison population will be fixed along with crime. Now, because he's saying, you know, the day they get sentenced, the next day's the execution. And I've argued this for a long time. I'm talking to a prosecutor, I know.
You are.
I don't see death penalty doesn't have its value in society. I don't see it as a disincentive for the majority of people, because I don't think they think they're going to get caught.
I agree with you.
Okay.
I agree with you from the sense of...
I don't think the bad guy goes, I'm not going to do this because I could get the death penalty. But I think it gives justice to the people that lost the person.
I don't think the bad guy is going to say, I could get the death penalty because I'm going to commit this because I'm going to commit the death penalty.
And I'm going to choose not to do it because it's a death penalty.
I think that there is a societal deterrence of society in general is saying, like, I'm not putting them in that situation because the death penalty can be used and I don't want them to bring it against me. I think if the person's acting in that act, they're not worried about what the punishment
right.
would be. But before they get to that act, society in general, the law, you know, they're, man, nah, we need to use the death penalty more. I think as a deterrent, and the problem with using it as a deterrent is when the offense occurs and then you have to wait 30 years. So that family, you could have a family member that has right. a deceased there. They have to wait 30 years for actual mm-hmm. – it doesn't matter what the jury – the jury could give you life for life without parole, but if you're sitting in jail for 30 years before the death penalty, that family's – that family doesn't have that opportunity to see that justice actually enacted. So
I think that's where, I think that's the, for me, it's always been the stronger argument when people are advocating death penalty. I see it more on the victim's family, loved one's side than I do as that deterrent. Oh, and by the way, B. Dark also says about your file bill. He said, I agree with him, but it should be under the age of 12, not just 6. So.
And we can have that discussion. The reason why I put 6 right now is because under the current law, 6 is mandatory life without parole. So if you're already going to be life without parole, why not just have the death penalty as part of it there? Look, I'm all for using it for increase, but I'm a let me get what I can get and 6. Make the rational argument that I can get.
All right, coming back, more with Representative Matt Simpson. Plus, Dr. Bill joins us here in just a couple minutes with the latest on Milton.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, 12:35, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday. And the latest on a very strong hurricane, Milton, out there. We'll check in with our staff meteorologist, Dr. Bill Williams. Doc, thanks for your time.
Yeah, this is quite a storm. We were talking about it yesterday when it... reached to an incredible intensity of 180 mile per hour sustained winds, and it carried that on into the evening. The storm is now beginning to move away from the Yucatan Peninsula and headed more toward the northeast. It's actually east-northeast at 9 miles per hour, and it should maintain that direction and maybe pick up its forward speed. At the moment, the highest winds are a bit less than yesterday, and the reason we had what we called an eyewall replacement cycle last night. When storms are this intense, the eye becomes very small, and it reaches a small diameter and then begins to collapse, and a new eyewall forms at a larger diameter. And during that time period, the winds drop off. And so what happened is this morning, the highest winds were down to a mere 145 miles per hour.
Wow.
And quite a change from yesterday. But what will happen now is that it is going to gradually intensify. And now that it has established a new eye, which will gradually get smaller with time. And sometimes over a long track, the eyewall replacement cycle can happen several times. Right now, it's up to 150 miles per hour, and it's very possible it could reach 160 later today. So look forward to a slow intensity. I don't think it'll get back up to the 180, but certainly I think 160 could happen. The target still remains the Tampa area, and that will occur tomorrow night. It could be a little bit to the north of it, a little bit to the south, but certainly Tampa is the target. When the storm gets closer to the to Florida and the peninsula, we may see it decrease a bit, and that's because some wind shear will start. The higher latitude it goes, the more it creeps to the north, the stronger the upper air winds are, and that will tend to weaken the storm. It affects the structure. But it's still going to be a very strong hurricane when it reaches the Florida coast, anywhere from 125 to maybe as high as 140 miles per hour. And when that, those are the sustained winds, and they're talking about gusts that are going to be higher than that. Even at 125 miles per hour, you can have gusts that be over 140. So the target, again, is the Tampa area. And the storm surge is going to be rather significant. It'll be record-setting for the western side of the peninsula because in the Tampa area, it could be as high as 15 feet. And we're looking at a range of 10 to 15 feet for the Tampa Bay. But also, the 10 to 15 could apply a little bit to the north, say Clearwater, and also quite a bit to the south through, let's say, Sarasota. And a 10-foot surge, which is record-breaking for many areas, that could occur well to the south of Sarasota particularly to the south of where the eye actually moves across. So after it impacts Tampa, and what's really different here is it's more of a direct hit. In the past, the western part of the peninsula would be involved with a recurving storm, and that means that many times it would be parallel to the coast before maybe moving inland over northern Florida. This one is more of a direct hit, and that amplifies the storm surge. So we're looking for those really high values, and then the storm will cross the peninsula, and that will be tomorrow night and then early on Thursday, and will eventually move offshore and out into the Atlantic, probably pretty close to Cape Canaveral. It will have a serious effect on Orlando. Orlando may be just a little bit to the north of where the center of the storm finally moves across the peninsula, but and it may end up following Interstate 4, which is the main artery from Orlando to Tampa. And then it will decrease a bit as it goes across and maybe drop to a Category 1 or 2 when it arrives in the Cape Canaveral area, and then we'll move out directly out into the Atlantic. It's not going to go up to the Carolinas, but it's going to go out to sea and head all the way out to Bermuda.
Dr. Bill, it's God bless those people down there. And once again, this impact, you believe, is tomorrow or tomorrow evening? What's the best guess on that time?
It's going to start in the evening. The impact will most likely occur. It's going to be after sunset, so it'll be late in the evening, and perhaps closer to midnight or maybe a little after midnight, but that's going to be the time that it'll reach the coast. The other thing, too, is just going to be a serious problem. The peninsula has had quite a bit of rain recently, and now we're going to see an additional 5 to 12 inches and maybe as much as 18 inches of rain closer to the center of the storm. So flooding going to be serious, and we also may even see some tornado activity, especially to the south of the storm center.
Dr. Bell, we appreciate the update as always, and we'll be checking back with you soon on Milton.
Okay, Sean.
All right, there goes our staff meteorologist and tropical weather expert, Dr. Bill Williams. He's been doing this for over 40 years, and he's always a great resource to have. I continue our conversation with Representative Matt Simpson. And another bill pre-filed, and it's something that you and I think we talked about back in July when this all happened, the Jubilee Gate there that went down with a Jubilee, I think the first of the year, the second of the year. And questions about who could take, and there was an arrest made. I want to point out the arrest that was made was not for somebody being a Jubilee without a license. It was resisting law enforcement, right?
Right, and I think they were over the limit.
Yes,
and they were also had fish that were not the size.
Of size. So yeah, they were undersized and over the limit, and they fought with law enforcement, mm-hmm. which is, I don't know if y'all have checked the stats, usually doesn't work. Okay, but you have pre-filed a bill that would no longer require a fishing license to take part in a Jubilee.
Right.
Now, explain your logic here.
My logic is simple. There's only two places in the world that this occurs. This, Mobile Bay and in Tokyo in Japan. If you're walking down and you have an opportunity, or there's some a notice that goes on that says, hey, there's a Jubilee going in, and you don't have any fishing equipment, you know, this isn't something that you can plan. This isn't something where you're like, hey, me and the guys are going to go out and we're going to have a weekend at Jubilee, because you don't know what the conditions are going to be. You never know when it's going to arise.
Right.
So if we say, look, if I've got family coming in from my wife's sister lives in Maryland. If they come down from Maryland, it's like, hey, let's go experience a Jubilee. I got a buzz. There's a post. We can go check out and see what a Jubilee is. Why do they have to have a fishing license from the state of Alabama to walk down in ankle deep water where fish are just surrounding them to say, you know what, you've got to go get a license to do this, to check through this stuff?
Well, I mean, if they just want to stand there in ankle deep water and not take,
if you want to pick up a fish.
Then you're taking.
You're taking. So if you want to pick up a flounder that's sitting there, and I understand these flounders, these fish go back to, they're not dying there. They
right.
Go
Everybody
back
has this idea they all died. They do not.
They do not all die. They don't all die there. But the simple protrusion of, hey, you're walking down the beach, there's fish right there. If you pick it up, you have to have a license from the state of Alabama.
Well, then why? To me, it's about not the method, but the harvest. Right. So what is done here, what we do, because we have a finite resource with fish and game, mm-hmm. we have to have limits and we have to have policy to make sure we have more flounder next time, your kids, my kids, their kids down the road. Right. We saw this in North America when we had unlimited harvest.
Right.
The normal human, motivation will be to take everything I can get and then get some to put in mom's freezer, too. But the license there, which you can get mm-hmm. online, Outdoor Alabama app. You can.
I've tried to use the app. No,
I use it all the time.
Somebody has brought me to try to use the app and say, hey, there's an app that you can go do it.
Sure.
Now, if you already have a hunting license, if you already have a fishing license, yeah, it's probably pretty easy to renew or do whatever you need to do to there from showing what you have there. But if you're somebody that's coming in that doesn't have a hunting license, doesn't have a fishing license to try to find out how much is a fishing license to have to go through, it's not readily available on that app.
If you hit it and hit license,
I've done this, Sean. I'm telling you, find out license.
Okay, here's my license.
This is going to be fun.
Right.
This is going to be fun.
All right, so licenses, all right. Purchase a license.
Mm-hmm. How much does that cost?
Which one are you getting?
Let's say we're getting a fishing license, saltwater fishing license.
The saltwater fishing license, I have the lifetime, so I don't know. Let's see here.
Uh-huh. Yep, you're an outdoorsman. You would have it. But if you weren't, if you had to go through and download this app.
Yeah, there it is, $12.10.
Where's that at? Because right I had there. To download
if you
the
go,
app.
Yeah, if you go, when you're at the app and you just hit recreational saltwater fishing,
mm-hmm.
and you just click that, and you can go non-resident, so because this is people from Maryland, and it'll give you the annual, the trip, the pier, the things you right there.
All right, let's go outdoor. All right,
and they've done a good job. Licenses. I mean, we use the app to everything from
purchase
sapper fishing, or you come deer hunting with me. We're using this thing.
All right, so if I'm purchasing a license,
right,
you're putting in all your information to have to go through
if
there.
If you scroll past it,
all right, where am I scrolling to?
Just scroll to the bottom of that screen.
Right.
And sorry, radio audience, if you scroll, but y'all get your apps out and do the same thing. So if mm-hmm. you scroll to the bottom, it says learn more about the types of licenses available and pricing.
I see that.
And if you click that,
mm-hmm.
so you have non-resident and you have resident license and prices and license and prices for non-residents and residents.
Right. I am pulling up. Saltwater, there it is. It wasn't there. There we go. All right.
What I'm saying is, there's the ability to get the license, and to say that this is.
Well, now you're switching the topic on me because this is a problem that I have. No, this is a main thing that I want people to listen to.
What is your core here?
My core here is, you've talked about over harvesting and how we need to make sure the population is there and how we make sure. Mm-hmm. In the bill, it says this does not change the collection limits, and it does not change the size requirement.
And I've said that every time I've talked about your bill. I've said you
can't pick up more than 6. You can't pick up less than 14. We have to follow through the lines.
And I've said that the whole time with your bill. But let's talk about the license.
You've been great, but I've gotten into a couple discussions with Department of Conservation and Natural Resources, even officers the other day. They pulled me. We were at an event the other day, and somebody who was an officer says, you're just going to allow anybody to come and pick up them whatever they have. And so, no, that's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to make sure that they do have to stay within the limits.
Okay, but let's talk about the license feature that we have to have, right, mm-hmm. for anything else.
Mm-hmm.
You know why we have a license?
I can go full libertarian on you. Well, so why do you have to have a license
too.
To go full?
Yeah.
Why do I have to have a license to go to the government to approve mm-hmm. that I've pulled a fish out from the water?
Right.
So
because it is something that's held in trust commonly. It's not private. If you have private pond, you can come to my house this afternoon. And we catch every bass you can catch, and we keep undersized, oversized. Catch as many brim as you want.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's a public resource and it's finite.
Okay.
So the licenses, the money in licenses goes back into, let's talk about flounder. The hatchery
uh-huh.
that's providing the flounder, making this rebound on flounder, that takes money.
They've done a tremendous job at Conservation Natural
right.
Resources.
So that, but
Chris
license money goes
has done
there.
A great job through there.
License money also goes to enforcement, because if there's not enforcement, then the things I agree with you on about keeping to the limits and keeping the size limit and creel limit,
mm-hmm.
if there's no enforcement, people might stray, mm-hmm. right? So license money goes back into that enforcement. License money also goes into matching money for I think it's Wallet Bro. These things exist where there's a federal excise tax on hunting and fishing equipment. That money goes to Washington. We can get certain amounts of it back, but we have to use it as a formula with how many licensed hunters or anglers we have in the state, and that money comes back. It's a matching money from money we've already spent. You and I go buy some spinning rods today.
Mm-hmm.
We're paying. It's a built-in excise tax. It's even before it hits y'all's store. It's already in there. Well, that money goes to a federal fund, and if you then use it, it's a ratio of how many licenses you sell for that thing. Let's say it's on the fishing side. How many rods, reels, nets, tackle, waiters, all these things.
Right.
That money then is sitting up there. We as a state say we have X number of anglers in the state, and then we get money back from the Fed to match our money that lets us put in boat ramps and hatcheries and all these kind of things. So if they take that flounder, and I get your idea that people want to do this, but if they're taking that flounder, why do they have a right to take that flounder without giving back? Because they got it during a jubilee, but you and I are going to go off, well, I won't say where off, but maybe the mouth of Blakely River, some bull minnows, and we catch them with hook and line. We still took them too. They're gone. They're out of the thing. So what are those people paying back into the system? It's like the gas tax, the much maligned gas tax, right? But we have gas taxes because you put gas in your vehicle and you ride on the roads, you tear up the road, you have a user fee.
It's a user fee. You're exactly right.
So, I mean, that's my thing about the license part of it. And you've never said take everything you want. You were always on that from day one. But the licensing portion is if I'm harvesting something in this system, and Lord knows I can go full libertarian, but the decades of, I was pretty wild in my 20s on that, but the years of pragmatism have pushed that away. And because it's a public resource that's managed for all the people of the state and visitors, you have to give back to be able to have that resource and be able to use it.
Now, the where I'm going to differ with you there is because you talk about the rods, the reels, the tackle, everything from there. We're not talking about that in a jubilee perspective, but because you're not going out with a rod and a reel to catch the fish.
Right.
From there.
So they themselves have not even contributed any money, like the people that bought the rods, reels, monofilament line, kale hooks, treble hooks, corks.
Right. They haven't.
They haven't contributed. They haven't bought marine fuel with the tax on it. They hadn't done any of that. So, but they get to take the flounder.
The flounder that came up to them, they're walking down the street, they're walking down the beach, and the flounder's up there.
It came to get air, but
they came to get air, and they're walking on the beach. It's not like they're walking, they're on the boat going out, and you're going to say, hey, this is where we have.
Right.
So I think there's a difference there. I also think, and we've had some preliminary conversations behind the scenes to figure out, okay, do we need to have a lifetime jubilee bill where you pay a license and you have a lifetime credit for a jubilee? Is that something that the people down here would take, would accept to come through as part?
Okay.
I'm just not a big fan of raising fees. I get that there's a purpose for it. I get that there's a need with what we have. My question to everybody, and we start talking about these conferences, I'm going to bring it full circle back to when you start talking about to other legislators from out the state. When I tell them to come in, and not everybody's an outdoorsman. Not everybody is somebody that's going to be, hey, I got the hunting license, I got the fishing license, I've got this. But if they come down and they come to one of these wonderful conferences that we have at the Grand Hotel, and they're sitting there with their family, and somebody says, you know what, there's a jubilee going on.
There's a bell ringing.
There's a bell ringing. The jubilee's going on right now. Let's go check out the jubilee with what they have. To have the state government to come in and say, no, you have to have a license before you can go down there and get involved in that. That's a problem for me. I think we need to promote the jubilee with what we have. I think we need to talk about it.
But what if those people, your family from Maryland, comes to the farm with me, right? And we're now in mid-January, and the rut's going on, and this has happened. The buck we've been looking for forever happens to just stand in my front yard because he's chasing does. But they don't have a license. But gosh, this is your chance to shoot that. I mean, that's a 130-inch buck. Wouldn't you just go ahead and shoot him because it's this opportunity here?
And I think that may be a solution that we have through this process. I think if you're bringing your rod and reel, you're bringing tackle, you're bringing your buck, you're bringing your gun, you're bringing something to have through there, you're prepared to go through there. But
if
you're
just walking, what if they
you're
use
just
a gig?
Like, hey, there's a fish.
But what if they use a gig?
I'm fine with them not using a gig.
But what if they do use a gig? They're using a tool.
Yeah, if they're using a tool, they've paid for what they have to go through there. I think we're missing where I'm talking about the people that aren't involved with bringing a tool down or aren't gigging or aren't fishing. The people just walking by to be able to say, hey, I'm going to pick up a flounder.
It's the fastest way to pick them up when they're like that, though, with the gig. Coming right back, more with Representative Matt Simpson right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Subject we could take into extra innings for sure, but just a few more minutes left with Representative Matt Simpson. Matt, I want to read so many texts in here. Moz, first up, says, if my wife has to have a hunting license to sit with me in a dove field or a deer stand, heck yeah, you need a fishing license if you're going to take from the resource. This texter, Big Jim, says, Sean, it's plain and simple. If Alabama residents have a fishing license, everybody should. And where's that one gone? It's this one from I don't know who this is, unnamed texter, said it makes it very hard to purchase a license. They want to add a bunch of BS when I only want a simple saltwater license. So I'm just saying, back to your saying about hard to get that license. This texter says, unnamed texter, he's right, Sean. It's ludicrous to have a license for a Jubilee. Used to be you didn't have to have a license to fish with a cane pole. I think actually you still don't have to have a license inside the county of residence. You don't have to have one. Dell says, so I can fish and keep crabs and other and just call it a Jubilee. It's a and have a safe haven. And that's a question I had. I don't know if we have time, but when do you define the start of the Jubilee and the end of the Jubilee?
And that's a question we've got to figure out. You know, some of the stuff we want to file a bill to get the conversations had. I've been on your show a number of times talking about this bill and talking about this process to go through. It was one of those things of I think you want to get the discussions, and that's why you file it early. This isn't something that I filed and wait. Hey,
right,
last minute.
No, you've been very open about it since the word go.
And you know, if we can come to a ground, I'm more than willing to take anybody's input. I've talked with several people who are very angry with me about this bill and upset about what it could cause and what it could do. And I am more than willing to sit down with people and say, okay, here's my goal. What can we do to make it least intrusive as possible? What can we do to make the bill better to accomplish what some of the other people are trying to do? I think this is a legislative process. This is not something where I'm drawing a line in the sand and saying, dang it, this is what the bill is going to say.
Right.
I'm coming.
You're saying the concrete's
saying,
not dry.
No. This is my intent. This is where we can have, and let's see what we can do to make a bill better.
All right. Monty said the Jubilee should be treated like a tax-free holiday. When it happens, you're lucky enough to be there. Creole limits should still apply, as well as fines for not conforming to such. Not many people get to partake in Jubilees. That's what you've been saying. B-Dark says in South Baldwin County, you better have both and $70 to get them. Oh, he says, what is crazy is any citizen should be able to pick up a fishing fish without a license. So this is, there are people that have absolutely said that there shouldn't be any licensing. B-Dark says that. It's crazy. Any citizen shouldn't be able to pick up a fish without a license. In South Baldwin, you better have both and $70 to get them both. Ken says, if you pay property tax on the water, you shouldn't be arrested for picking up a fish. Terry says Jubilee harvest is traditional use by the people of the community. Terry has an argument there that if I was an unfair arbiter, I wouldn't have read, because if you look at federal law, traditional use is absolutely something. It's a reason native cultures too can harvest like salmon in ways that, you know, non-native cultures can't, or, you know, people that aren't part of a tribe can't.
That's an interesting argument. That's a good one, Terry. I like that one.
Dang it, Terry. Matt says, hey, Sean, I'm definitely on Representative Simpson's side with regards to this issue. It's a rare event, and folks don't need to be harassed by law enforcement. Unless those folks showed up with commercial-sized coolers, leave them alone. Let's see. Duckman says, residents should have more rights than non-residents. If you have a fishing license, you buy an out-of-state fishing license. I fish in Florida, I fish in Louisiana, Mississippi. Once I buy that license, I have the same rights as the native.
That's the Interstate Commerce Clause. It's very tough to where you can limit and say only Alabama people can fish here or only this. I mean, it's just...
How'd that work when we said we're going to have a different toll on the Bayway for people who live in Mobile and Baldwin counties? The Fed said...
There's ways around that. I do still think there are ways around that.
That's another conversation.
That's another conversation.
This texture, unnamed texture, said, and what's this person going to do with the flounder when they pick it up? Leave the law the way it is. Too many exceptions to all the laws and regulations. Michael says, I'm 100% with you on the Jubilee, Sean. They're welcome to take in the sights, sounds, and excitement. They just shouldn't be allowed to possess those fish. How you can tell at a ramp who picked up from a Jubilee and who netted them. So, and then this is just the tip of the iceberg of the text.
It is a very hot topic that I can go to the store, I can go to Publix or Target. And I've got friends of mine that reach out to me all the time and say, hey, you're wrong on this. And, you know, that's a fair argument.
I appreciate the debate. I appreciate you being here. Thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.